You know, today is really a day where I think we have a special treat because we're going to get a little bit personal about entrepreneurship because it's more than building a business. It's really building a complete life if you want to do it right. And so how do you do this? I think as entrepreneurs, we bite off this big opportunity and we put everything we have into it. And many times it can cause us to have, times in our lives when it becomes very stressful and things begin to unravel at some level in our personal life with our family. Maybe even sometimes it's our health and let alone our business being successful. So today I'm bringing on a good buddy of mine, Jack Crawford. He's a venture capitalist. He's a founder and general partner of Impact Venture Capital, but he's also a guy that has sort of figured it out, right? So Jack and I, Jack is one of those people that I look to as a good role model for a lot of us to how do you build this well-balanced life? How do you manufacture something that really keeps it all rolling? And so today we're going to talk to Jack. Jack's the, he's a Kauffman Fellow partner. He's a fellow EO member. He's the founder and board member at Social Venture Partners. And he's built this strategic plan for life that he's been doing for the last several years. He's a speaker. And today I want to introduce you to Jack Crawford. How you doing, Jack?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me today.
You bet. And, I sort of set this up as you are this hero. How did you start begin the discovery of like how to build a better, more well-balanced life? How did that happen?
Well, let me start by saying I appreciate your comments, but I view this as sort of a work in process. everything's sort of a draft. A working tool that I'm fine-tuning and sort of trying to learn more about. And my objective for sharing it here and in previous meetings and sessions with others has candidly been to crowdsource life's best practices from others. And I found that if I share some of these half-baked ideas, that oftentimes I end up learning more than I would have anticipated about how best to live life. So I've got a lot of close friends and family members and colleagues and people in the community and people in my industry that have shared information back after presenting some of these ideas. But just to circle back on how this all started, I was looking at successful entrepreneurs, and they were trying to balance wealth creation, their health, relationships with their family, and oftentimes one or more of those things were breaking down as they were building a successful business. And so they were paying maybe less attention to their health or less attention to their relationships as they were building their companies. And I wondered if there was a more proactive way that they could sort of live life and not sacrifice success and not sacrifice their health or their relationships. What if they sort of took a proactive approach to living? And I was struck by the way in which I was approaching the business world, retreats, half-day retreats, annual planning sessions, key performance indicators in the business world, I was wondering, why aren't we applying those same sort of measuring elements, assessment tools, planning to life? And yeah. So to make a long story short, I decided that I was going to put together a strategic plan for life, much like a business. And I started with what I thought were organized thoughts and decided to present them at a date night with my wife, right? We're going out on date nights. And I said, as we sat down for dinner, we
can picture this is very romantic. I got a strategic plan, honey. You want to?
we're at the restaurant. We order. I pull out, kind of a spreadsheet and some ideas and some notes. And I said, tonight, honey, we're going to work on our goals for the next year, our goals for life. We are going to establish some key performance indicators that measure how we're doing in life. And I am so excited about framing this, working on this with you, documenting it, and then sort of holding each other accountable for, living the best life that we can live. And she said something like, I thought you said we were going to dinner and a movie. And so
how long ago was that?
I think that was about 10 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
And well, you and I are at different places. This is interesting because you talk about referencing very successful entrepreneurs. I love the idea of referencing the very successful, but there's also a lot of our listenership that is sort of in those earlier stages. Maybe they're launching the business, haven't really had any success yet to speak of, but they're all in on their business. Is this discussion going to apply to everybody, you think?
Yeah, you know, initially I thought it was just going to apply to entrepreneurs, and I was thinking, first it was a self-serving sort of, hey, let's just develop this for our lives. And so my wife Karen and I were sort of strategizing about it, and then I started talking with some entrepreneurs about it. We included life planning as part of an accelerator module as we were mentoring startups. And then some college students were being threaded into the accelerator program, so I started interacting with some college students. And then I got accepted into the Kauffman Fellows program. You mentioned it earlier. And they have this thing called a Thought Leadership Program project. Thought Leadership Project, TLP, and you were supposed to spend 2 years basically researching something and then presenting it as kind of your field project, your thesis project, as part of the two-year leadership program with Kauffman. Well, I finished mine, and my class gave me a leadership award for the thesis project that I did and asked me to present it at graduation. So now I was realizing, wait a minute, this applies to startups. It applies to, you know, entrepreneurs at various stages of their companies, college students, and now the VC community is asking that I share a little bit. So since then, I presented it to 300 people at the Kauffman Fellows graduation. Since then, people from the EO world, people like Jeremy Perkins, they've asked me to come out and present to their management team. Craig Hittrick has asked me to a local entrepreneur and successful executive here locally has asked me to present to a room full of CEOs. I've been asked by my son's high school to present it to high school students. Mm-hmm. So I've got this variety of people that are working on different things in different industries at different age groups, all thinking and talking about life with purpose, how to proactively live, and how can they take sort of a set of important ideas that are in their head and sort of put it into a plan that is more executable.
Okay.
And so that's where it's sort of headed. So I think it applies well beyond sort of entrepreneurship, although that's where my mind is at right now and sort of thinking about helping and supporting entrepreneurs with.
So challenging you on this a little bit, because I think this is interesting. I think we can learn from each other. And I agree with you that I learned so much from my guests. And I think sometimes you're hashing out what's the best way to win in life. So thinking about that, so your wife, she's getting the Jack businessman on date night, and the reaction is like, hey, wait a minute. What happened from there? How'd you convince her?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure that I have. I think 10 years later, I'm still working on convincing her to tell you the truth. But I think you start to integrate things into your life. I don't think everybody's brain sort of works on sort of, hey, I'm going to take an idea, I'm going to put it into a plan, and I'm going to execute it. Most entrepreneurs do think that way. They're problem solving. They're coming up with an idea that they think solves a problem. They're creating a plan to execute. They're trying to mobilize other team members, other investors, other customers that they've got, in a sense, something that's viable, and they're executing on it. Some people are more creative. They're more relying on sort of serendipity. They're more reactive, maybe. And so I think you have to understand sort of different personality types. I think for my wife and I, it's been a bit of an alignment tool, and so we've done different things. But let me ask you a question, Mark.
Yeah.
You know, sort of as you are thinking about your own life, there's tools that we use in business, like key performance indicators, that tell us whether we're on track or off track. There are, you know, flight plans when you're flying an airplane to tell you to, you know, nudge right, nudge left, go faster, go slower, go higher, go lower. There are things that we do with our weight, you know, jumping on a scale a couple of times a week. We look at the gas tank in our car. We know what, if we've got enough fuel in the tank. We go to the doctor and we measure sort of, you know, we get an annual physical of some kind. How are we measuring, you know, how are you measuring your life to ensure that you're sort of on track with what's most important to you and that you're living your best life?
Interesting, because I spend a lot of time thinking about this, as I know you do. And I always say the more we're banging, the more we're in the zone, hammering on the things that are important to us at our best, those are the times in life when we're advancing the ball. And I want to ask myself each day, and I do this kind of on a regular basis through journaling, is like, how much was I banging today? Was I, you know, as I think about this, for me, it's around my family, my friends, my community, and my personal health. And how many times was I pushing the limit in those areas trying to make an impact? And many days go by and there's almost nothing when I'm like really at my best. But other days come in and I'm like three or four times throughout the day, I really feel like I was impactful. So it's kind of an end of the day self-assessment. And then we sort of do that on a regular basis when we look at, you know, how much of an impact we may have had with our in each of those categories. But I don't have the metrics like you do. I'm not as metric driven. I'm a little more emotionally driven. And as I'm driving to work in the morning, I'm sitting there going, am I in a good mood? Am I in a bad mood? And usually it has to do with how much I've been banging, right? So
right.
That's really just sort of like almost like a gut check for myself.
And do you find that your best days are when you are diversified across a variety of activities, maybe some that relate to health or business or family? When do you find you're having your best days, your most fulfilling days, your most joyful days?
I think, you know, that's interesting that you asked that. I appreciate, you know, you turning the tables on me a little bit, because we want to make sure we understand, you know, in totality. But I think I'm 56, so I'm a little bit less, as we compare where I'm at and to where you're at. I'm 56. I think you're early 40s. How old are you?
I wish I was early 40s. I'm early 50s.
Early 50s. Yeah, okay, yeah. You're a little bit younger than me, and I think there's a lot of people that are like in their beginning stages. And so relating to where I'm at, I'm in that, I guess, time in my life where I really want to help other people. And mm-hmm. So the times, I think what makes me happiest is when I'm really making an impact on somebody else. If I can make an impact on my children, on my wife, on my grandkids, that feels really good. I call my friends are my business partners. So if I can do something that really makes an impact on them, that feels good. But then also our hometown, right? So
yep.
we love this hometown that we live in. So I would say it's not always diversified. If I can get one or two impactful things a day, that's a W. And of course, I go to CrossFit virtually every day, you know, four or five times a week. So that is always, I mean, to me, if I get a great workout and my family has got my back still, I live pretty carefree. It takes all the stress down that I might
sure.
have. How about you?
Well, I'll tell you, you are doing things in line with what people do in blue zones. Have you heard the term blue zone before?
I have not.
Blue zone, there's I think it's four or five blue zones around the world where these people seem to be living worry-free and absolutely fulfilling and joyful lives at a higher level than most other regions around the world. And so they did some research to understand the patterns in a blue zone compared to other places. And there were five elements of what makes up a blue zone and what these people were doing. Some of them are pretty predictable.
Hmm.
And I would say that you're very good at a few of these. Maybe you're very good at all of them, and I don't have full visibility. But
yeah,
first of all, quality nutrition, you kind of expect, yeah. right? Put good fuel in the tank. They have a focus on fitness. Mm-hmm. They do. It's the daily walks. It's, you know, other things to ensure that they have a high level of fitness. There's some kind of meditation or prayer on a regular basis. They have zeroed in on their life's purpose. They have some certainty around their life's purpose. You know, you do a lot to empower other people. You're doing a lot to empower your family. I see what you do in the community. I think you've created an identity and a purpose for yourself around generating real results, meaningful results, because it's not just being nice. No, you have expectations for results that are being driven in these relationships that you're investing into. And I think that gives you, at least from my perspective, purpose in life. And a lot of mm-hmm. people are searching for that. What is their why?
You bet.
And the last element is social connections. And so if I think about like my wife, Karen, she recently started teaching fitness class. She got two graduate degrees, but she's teaching fitness classes at Lifetime Fitness in Folsom. And there's social connections there. There's fitness. She's teaching. She knows a lot about nutrition and sort of living health. I think she might have zeroed in on part of her purpose
mm-hmm.
of empowering people to embrace quality nutrition and high levels of fitness to get the most out of life, right?
If you don't have your health, you don't have anything. So she's helping in that world.
And bringing friends to classes and encouraging her family to come and work out. And so, you know, she's a fitness fanatic. So, but there's other people that are, you know, maybe business is their thing. I have a good friend, Yatish Mishra. He loves business. He likes working with entrepreneurs because he wants to take their game to the next level. And I think putting, you know, sort of, points on the board for him is sort of, you know, seeing entrepreneurs succeed. And if he can, if he can elevate his own wealth along the way or diversify his assets along the way, then he's doing that. But to me, it's sort of, it brings me back to if you can, you know, maybe you're trying to create a blue zone here in Sacramento, right? Mm-hmm. How do we sort of take social connections and life purpose and, you know, you're a model of how we should be, you know, working out 3, 4, or 5 times a week to, when your body's in shape, your brain works better, right? You know, those kinds of things. But let me circle back and turn the tables on you one more time, because I have a question around, there's something called unconscious competence, or Kaufman referred to it as being in your zone of genius. Mm-hmm. And they sort of translated what I would view as a something we see in athletics all the time to the business world. When you see Buddy Hield of the Sacramento Kings scored 42 points last night, and they ended up coming back in this, you know, historical victory that, you know, has never happened, right? In 8,000 NBA games, no team has ever come back from 22 points down in the fourth quarter. And Buddy Hield was in a zone, right? He was not thinking of, should I dribble right? Should I dribble left? He was not, he was just shooting, and the basket must have looked huge because everything was going in. He was in a zone. And I think they talk about that in athletics all the time. The question for you is, when do you feel like you're in a zone? When do you feel like, you know, you're not really trying hard? It's just sort of happening naturally, and you're performing at a high level, and you're enjoying it, and you're creating value, but yet it's not that hard. Mm-hmm. You know, just sort of, you're in, there's a book I think called Flow, where you're in sort of, you've got this momentum. Do you find that there are moments in your life when you're sort of in a state of unconscious competence or in your zone of genius?
There is a little bit of that. I find a lot of times when I'm not in that zone, you know, I'm not banging. But I think what I've had a knack for is putting people in my life that that believe the same kind of things that I do. And so we could call that team building. Mm-hmm. So I've been spending this last several years really working on assembling teams, my own team here. And I think the strength of any successful person or company really is about those people that they put in their life, their inner circle, if you will. So I've spent a good deal of my time trying to round out my inner circle. And I've actually fallen down a lot on that in this last couple of years, but it's been as I've seen that come together, though, as I've seen the inner circle come together, these are the most satisfying times for me, because I know that a team that works together can kind of do anything, right? Chemistry is so important. That's probably what happened last night with the Kings. All of a sudden they had some chemistry, and when that happens, I'm in my zone. When I see chemistry happening, whether it be in a strategic planning session, maybe a company meeting, or putting together a podcast, when I start to see chemistry happening and everybody playing their position on the court, I feel like that's when I'm at my best. And when I'm not at my best is when that I haven't put those right. I've guessed on putting some people in my life, and we haven't worked so well together. And I look in the mirror and go, what could I have done differently?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really about team building.
I think I've my advisory board for life is sort of my EO forum mates, right? Entrepreneurs organization has provided incredible value. So the guys in that forum have shaped me. I think some of the people that have gotten involved with social venture partners, because they're thinking about this community and philanthropic efforts and taking education to the next level and doing something beyond themselves. Mm-hmm. That's a group that sort of shaped me. So that's been interesting. I think the one other concept that I was going to bounce off of you is as you're filtering relationships, as you're filtering sort of core values for your family, for your life, there's a concept in brain science where the brain is constantly looking for evidence of achievement. And the idea is that when your brain has an open cycle, where does it look for accomplishment, achievement. And without a plan for life, I've concluded that your brain might naturally gravitate toward your inbox or toward maybe some work project that is well-defined and well-planned out. But your brain might not sort of navigate toward spending time with your 11-year-old daughter or shooting a few free throws with your 14-year-old son. It might not naturally, because it's not on your list. It doesn't demonstrate sort of immediate evidence of achievement. So I've concluded that as we're filtering relationships, as we're filtering core values, as we're filtering how to spend our time, that if we can help our brain sort of focus on what really matters, then we'll actually be developing the relationships that are important, achieving the things in life business-wise that that really are the most important. We'll almost be training our brain to focus on, you've read Essentialism, I think,
yes.
The disciplined pursuit of less things in life, because we'll have a documented plan to go back to anytime our brain is searching for what to do next. Have you taken this sort of thoughtful approach with regard to relationships, work and otherwise, or your family, or even your discipline around fitness? Have you taken that to a plan for life? What I know you have some things. I see whiteboards around here. I know.
A lot of my planning starts on a whiteboard. So I have these, if you come in here to Mark Tank inside the Marquee Media Studios, you'll see all kinds of whiteboards. In my house, there's whiteboards. And I think one of the things that I did after selling my companies a number of years ago is like, what am I going to do? What am I going to be? I wrote out a mission statement, and I'm one of those people that sort of lives with the mission and my purpose, and these mantras, these markisms, these are part of what I call triggering my purpose, right? So as I look at these mantras, as I look at the, if you look around my office, you'll see things that sort of trigger my purpose. You'll see things, gifts from my daughter, about harder you work, the luckier you get. Things like that, radio that my dad gave me when I had some achievement early on and so on. These things remind me of what it's all about, what I'm trying to accomplish. So I'm probably a little less on the structured detail plan like you are, and a little more in the symbolism and the overarching the mantras and so on, and putting people, but those things remind me to go do what I got to do, go spend time with my grandson, go throw batting practice to one of my grandkids. It reminds me when I look at these things that that sort of remind me of why. It's that they trigger that.
You created an environment that ignites and inspires you and reminds you of the things that are important. Yep. And I'm wondering about your morning routine, because one of the things that I've found is particularly helpful. A guy from EO, Jeremy Perkins, asked me to come and speak to his management team. And I was there to, you know, supposedly teach. Oh, here comes this expert on life planning. So I immediately disarmed them, saying, hey, listen, I'm not here to teach you anything. I'm going to experience share. I'm going to share some of these things that I've been doing that I think are interesting, that are starting to generate results in my life and a greater level of fulfillment. And at the end, almost as a side comment, Jeremy says, hey, there's this book called Miracle Morning. Have you ever read it? And I, no. He said, oh, it talks about morning routines. Here, we got an extra copy. Go ahead and take it. So I kind of threw it in my backpack and thought, oh, I'll get back to it later. I don't know. It was like a month went by, and I pulled this book out. I was on a flight or something, and I just started flipping through. And it basically talked about, it sounds like it's got a spiritual title of some kind, but it's really about establishing a disciplined morning routine. And I mention it now because you are inspired in the afternoon or in the evening when you're walking around and looking at these things. I think I found that, and I have some of those things around my office at both the home office and the office, but what I found is that the morning is really important to me. Establishing a disciplined routine to launch the rocket ship off on the day of life is really, really important.
So what
to
do
me.
You do? What's okay, Jack jumps out of bed, hit the ground running? Are you moving slow?
So not every day, but here's my intention, and I try and do this many days. There is something about a little bit of fitness in the morning for me. And so not every day, but I do try, and we have a spin bike at home. I do try and jump on that thing and just get a sweat. And I feel like it sort of, you know, It eliminates the clouds in my thinking.
How long
thinking.
After you get up are you jumping on that thing?
Oh, I'll have breakfast with my kids and, okay. And get them off to school.
So
and
you're
then
you're awake.
Yeah, yeah.
You've been moving around a little bit. Have something to eat.
So hopefully some quality nutrition. My wife's a really good cook and really does a great job making sure that our family's sort of fueled with the best of the best. But sort of quality nutrition, you know, connection with my family, starting the day. I try and spend a little bit of time talking with my wife. I try and spend 20 minutes or more on this bike, and then I go in and actually go through a pretty detailed set of review, basically a spreadsheet that talks about the core values of our family, mm-hmm. That talks about, I call it an identity map, where what I want to be when I grow up. Yeah. And so this is the type of father that I want to be, the type of husband I want to be, the type of friend I want to be, the type of venture capitalist I want to be, the type of community leader. I remind myself of the description of who I want.
So this
to
is
be.
Already written out from before. You're just sort of rereading it.
I'm reminding myself daily of the things that I said were important before I review my calendar, before I dive into my inbox, before I check texts, before I do anything. I'm plugged in to this thing called a focus board that I created that has these tabs of all of these things. Then of course it has what are the things that I'm trying to achieve this year as it relates to my fitness level, my faith, my family, my friends, my finances, you know, what am I going to do for fun? All of these things are sort of listed out. And these are major milestones that I hope to make happen this year.
So you're sort of grounded for the day because you've kind of thought big picture for a little bit. That lasts how long? 10, 15 minutes?
At the most.
Okay.
Yeah, 15 minutes. Let's call it 15 okay. minutes at the most reviewing this stuff. But to me, it's a friendly reminder of me talking to me. In a sense, the wise person who documented these ideas, sort of talking to the person who's half awake, getting ready to start the day with a radio show and a board meeting and a CEO meeting and an EO thing all crammed into one day, right? You know, it's sort of like before life sort of puts it on you, you're sort of proactively saying, these are the things in my life that are important. Now I'll look at my calendar and I'll find that I'll thread in other elements of life that are important to me. Maybe it's a second workout. Maybe it's a lunch with my kids. Maybe it's calling a friend that I haven't talked to. Maybe it's something business-wise that I know has been nudged for one day too long and I need to get to it because it was on that, you know, sort of 2020 plan.
Well, thinking about these routines, so I'm very routine-oriented as well. I like to get up and do my little thing, and I could go over that if it's of interest. But more than that, I kind of want to challenge us on windows of opportunity. So you and I are both investors. We invest into these companies, and there's a window of opportunity. They've got to build something great in a short period of time. And these people are thinking about doing things that are really going to change the world in some big way. And they have this window and we're talking as the old guys that maybe have had a little success, this work-life balance. Hey, sounds nice. But I think for a lot of people that seems like a luxury because I can remember when I was building my businesses in the earlier stages, you know, you're worried about not going out of business. You're worried about, you know, not having marital problems because you're going all in on this opportunity and this window to survive. And that puts strain everywhere. The life balance piece didn't fit with my window. How do you, in terms of thinking about our listener who might be wanting to change the world, wanting to make an enormous impact, and there's only this window, can you still have the life balance piece at the same time? And how do you pull that off?
Here's my perspective, in all honesty. If there's anything that I'm an expert in after reviewing 3,000 to 5,000 investment opportunities each year is identifying failure. I'm really, really good at identifying entrepreneurs that are on a path to failure. And I'd say 95% of the time, the reason why these entrepreneurs run out of gas, run out of air, run out of time is because they're running a sprint at a time when a pacing mechanism to run a marathon is required. And so the analogy that I would use is when you're on an airplane and they instruct you, hey, in case of an emergency, make sure you put your own mask on before you try and take care of anybody else. It's a great analogy for entrepreneurship, right? If you're not getting sort of the air in the form of health, social connections, a well-defined purpose, you know, things like nutrition and fitness. If you're not getting those things that are represented in a blue zone and that are represented as sort of important elements of life, you're likely not bringing your best ideas, your highest level of energy, your ability to ignite others. You're not bringing your best into that startup situation that requires it. Mm-hmm. You have to bring your A game every day. There's a tremendous sense of, there's competitors, there's limited resources. You are constantly mobilizing others. And if you're bringing sort of a mediocre level of energy, or you're tired, or your ideas just aren't that great that day, I mean, as an entrepreneur, you constantly feel like you have to be the smartest person in the room, and you've got to bring energy and creativity and mobilize and get your team all aligned. And if you're not bringing your A game every day, then you're likely on a path toward a short venture and a pivot to something else. Mm-hmm. If you're building a unicorn, if you're building an incredible company, I mean, you see the types of the mentality that some of these successful CEOs bring, and the thoughtfulness in which they're building these companies these days. And I just think it's a different set of requirements are important building businesses today, as compared to the grind it out and sacrifice your health, your marriage, your kids to be successful. I just think a more thoughtful approach is
important. How long can you go? So we may agree on most of this stuff, but let's say somebody's selling their company, or they're in the middle of a fundraise, and it's really has to be game on. I need to work 16 hours a week for some period of time. What's too long? I mean, are you saying there's never a time when you should go on a sprint? And I think of it as like intervals, right? There's times when we're working 16 hours a day for some period of time, a month, a few months, 6 months. But then if you do it too long, you're gonna the other things around you are gonna break down. How long can you do it and keep it from like crumbling? Should you ever do that?
Yeah, I guess my perspective, I'll just speak from experience. I'm not claiming to have the right answer. I'm just sharing experiences on what I've seen in myself. You can have a busy season. Every industry, every company has a busy season. It's when that busy season ends up continuing on for quarter after quarter, for year after year, and it becomes the new normal. Yeah. And I remember one night I was there was a lot of things happening with a portfolio company, and I was communicating to my wife that I was going to be late for dinner, family dinner on a Friday night. And I said, hey, listen, if this round of financing doesn't close tonight, I think 40 people are going to lose their jobs on Monday. I mean, I'm on the phone with these investors right now about closing this round of financing before midnight tonight. I'm going to be late for dinner and I might not make it. And she said, oh, another crisis, huh? And I said, what? No, you don't understand. 50 people are going to go home to their family saying, I don't have a place to work on Monday if I'm not here. And she was discounting what I was saying to my frustration. I said, what do you, you know, she said, yeah, I know, another crisis. She just wanted me to be home with our kids to have dinner. And she was just being a little flippant with me at a time when I was going through a pretty stressful moment. And I got off the phone and I was a little flustered. And, you know, I went through and, you know, I realized we navigated through some things over that weekend, and I navigated through that. And I don't think it was until about 6 months later that I recognized that some of the busy seasons were sort of, in all honesty, manufactured by me. I think in a way to demonstrate, I don't know, my importance or how valuable I was, or no one was going to die. I don't even know if they were really going to lose their jobs, but I had convinced myself on that Friday night that if this doesn't happen now, it's never going to happen, and this thing's going to blow up. Right. And I think that oftentimes I see entrepreneurs manufacturing an urgent situation, manufacturing a crisis. And, I might borrow a line from my wife and just say another crisis, huh? Mm-hmm. And they might look at me like, oh, you don't know, you're discounting something that's really important. And I just think that we can almost say that about anything. And what happens is, I'll throw it back to you here after this, Mark, but in life, what I found is that people seem to find perspective after tragedy. Tragedy has to strike, and then suddenly they have enhanced perspective on what's valuable. Mm-hmm. One of the most valuable aspects of this sort of strategic planning exercise for me has been the ability to maintain an enhanced level of perspective on what's important in my life without the tragedy. And I wish that for everybody. I don't want us to have to wait for tragedy in our lives to finally understand how important it is to tell our friends that we care about them and that we love them, to spend time with our kids, to invest in our marriages, to invest in our colleagues at work. And I'm not saying I'm great at any of those things. I can tell you I'm working hard at all of those things because they're important to me and I'm keeping them front and center. And what I see is a world that oftentimes adapts after we have the heart attack and then we determine that we're going to focus on our fitness. Our wife says she's going to leave us and then we say, wait a minute, I'll start investing more into the marriage. Our relationship with our kids is completely disrupted and then we circle back later for sort of an encore appearance as a grandparent. All of those things seem like they, through proactive living, through conscious living, might, you know, be addressed in a more appropriate way. And I'm hoping to figure that out and hoping to prove that.
I think you're right. I mean, this is such wisdom. And I think I've pushed that envelope a little bit in all of these areas, whether you want to call it my friends, my family, any other areas. I've tended to have those moments where I'm all in and other things end up suffering. And luckily, I mean, I think one of the things both of you and I have done, it probably in different ways, but we put in the support system. Right? I've been married 34 and a half years, been with my wife for 36, 37. So I picked the right person early on and I invested enough, I guess, at the right time where she's, you know, that we are a team. And that provides glue for the entire family. So I think that key relationship, I know a lot of people haven't been as fortunate as you and I have on that front, but it does take an investment to make that happen in the relationship and not letting it break and then have to be repaired. I mean, it's some days I feel like that, maybe a little bit, but you know, those are, and I think other people too, that maybe are already split up. Right. So, but building that support system outside of the office, whatever that looks like, that might be with the, you know, the people that are helping watch the kids, helping you to stay sane, your friends, the people you work out with, maybe. We all need to invest into those people so we have deep, meaningful relationships outside the office. People that want to help us. So when I come home and my wife knows I'm having one of those days, she's supportive of me because it's another crisis for me, of course, but for her, she knows her role in that is to sort of support me. And hopefully I do that for her too, when she's going through a mini crisis. Yeah. So it's about, to me, it's about investing into those deeper relationships.
I find that too. I mean, I have, 9 friends from, you know, grammar school, middle school, and high school that I still keep in touch with. Some of my best friends from college I keep in touch with. We have fantasy football is the glue to our relationships. It helps to keep us sort of connected for most of the year. We do an annual retreat together, and these are guys that, you know, I've known, you know, my some of my best friends in the world. My friend Tony from 7th grade, and my best friend from college happened to move back to my friend Todd moved back to my hometown. These are really important relationships. And if I don't invest time into those relationships, they're going to fade away, even with the history. I've been married to my wife for 22 years. You know, she's the glue. She's the sanity check for me. When I'm out of reality, mm-hmm. she's like, you know, hey, listen, you know, you need to come back into reality, and sort of puts me in my place and gets me thinking about things in a different way. I think oftentimes there's incredible wisdom that I get from my 3 kids. They give me a little bit of a reality check. So you never know where it's going to come from. It's not necessarily someone more experienced or someone that you've got a longer history with. I mean, there's things certainly that I've learned over the years from you and how you're living your life and sort of how you've aligned your purpose with people that you care about and your family and the way in which, you know, you are building your life. I mean, I think it's inspiring and it's igniting, and it has, I think, when you find people in life that are doing things and they seem to be executing it at an accelerated rate and have a high level of fulfillment and joy, you start to look at what they're doing and you try and mirror that in your own life with the things that are important to you.
You mentioned the book, Essentialism, The Disciplined Pursuit of Less. So, right, this is around saying no to a lot of stuff, cutting things out of your life that aren't as key. And I think for me, that really is the answer, even though there's a part of me that, or all of me that says we need to be banging, right? But the thing is, if we're banging on 1,000 different things in 1,000 different directions, you know, we're moving the ball a millimeter at a time,
yep.
A million things a millimeter at a time. And so to me, it's interesting to think about how many of these deep relationships one person can have. So you've got three kids, you've got your wife, I've got two kids, I've got my wife, I've got the three grandkids, I've got my inner circle, my business partners, right? Pretty soon, you're looking at a lot of people, and I sort of wonder, you know, as you start cutting different things out of your life, if these relationships, for me, these relationships are everything. They're my net worth is my, you know, my... They say your network is your net worth. My friends and family is my net worth, and those are everything to me. But when there ends up being so many, and you know, dividing up your time and your yeah. commitment to each of those, I wonder how you sort of do that, because you're looking at 3,000 companies a year. You're a speaker. You're traveling.
Yep.
Hey, what do you say no to?
I think I am. I have so many different interests. Things that I'm enthusiastic about. I have different relationships. I don't know that I'm good at this. And I think that's why I'm spending so much time thinking about it. There's so many things that I would like to pursue. And what I've ultimately done is come up with, envision a massive to-do list where the first thing you do is you sort of say, what can I stop doing? What is not really bringing me fulfillment or results? Where am I investing time and there's no reciprocal investment back? There's no value that's coming back to me in any kind. Okay, I'll stop doing those things. Then what can you defer? All right, I'm interested in it, but I don't have time right now. I'll defer that to 2021, right? I'll work on that in 2021. Then what can you delegate? Hey, I really want this to happen, but it doesn't have to be me. What can I delegate? And then what's left is kind of a smaller to-do list. And so what I find is I'm screening on a weekly basis, what can I delete? What can I defer? What can I delegate? And then ending up, hopefully, with a smaller to-do list that is not just focused on work, but is diversified across the areas of life, health, family, business, friendships, adventure. You know, all these things, we'll talk maybe later about, you know, how I'm trying to measure some of those things. But I think that cleans up the to-do list a little bit.
I think people come to guys like us occasionally asking for advice. And, you know, we try to experience share versus like tell you here's how you should do it because we're all different. But I'm wondering, like, what triggers that for you? Like, I call that back to basics. So if the kids, one of my kids or somebody is... you know, having a hard time in some area, it's like, okay, let's get back to basics, which is really what do we need to, what's the core of what's important to you and what do we need to carve out of your life so that you're not, it's not stressing you out anymore and let's focus on what's really important. I mean, what kinds of things trigger you to, you know, notice that, hey, it's time to get back to basics? Is this a routine or is this like, well, it's getting a little stressful, time to get back to basics? How does that work?
Yeah, for me, you know, I mentioned the morning routine of looking at this identity map. And so I have various things that I've described around each of the elements of my identity that I'm focused on. And so as an example for being a great dad or being a quality father, I have like wise and playful, and I try and be funny, but my kids don't really think I'm that funny. I usually laugh harder at my own jokes than they laugh, but I think they appreciate the effort.
Dad.
Yeah. But the point is that I have like four or five descriptive words before that level of an identity. I have the same thing with venture capitalist. Obviously, as a venture capitalist, you want to generate investment returns, but you also want to empower entrepreneurs. If you're going to review 3,000 investment opportunities a year and say no to, you know, 2,995 people, how can you do that in a thoughtful way, maybe in a helpful way? And how can you invest in a way that maybe grows the ecosystem that you live in? So those are some of the things that I'm thinking about. But it's, when you say back to basics, it resonates with me because each morning when I'm reviewing the person that I want to be, and then I'm out living life and things happen, I feel like I'm filtering by that identity map and some layered core values. As you might imagine, in addition to going through sort of core values in the business world, I've applied core values to my life, and I've written up this corny sort of Crawford Constitution that I've shared with my family about how, you know, we're going to work to maximize the time that we spend together as a family. We are going to work to be outrageously generous. We are going to try and, you know, laugh and play on a daily basis. We have things that are in this sort of Crawford Constitution, and that reminds me of like what I believe is really important. I don't have to think about it. I can just go back to these documents, and I don't know why. There's something about writing it down.
They're important to you, but how did they become important to your kids and your wife?
Well, I think there's certain things that I've learned from them that I hope are threaded in to some of these things. I think that as the father and the man of the household, I guess to some degree, I have established a draft proposal, a draft roadmap for life for their influence, right? And what I found is that people in my family, for the most part, have really interesting ideas, and they're looking for a framework to plug those ideas into. So dad throws up a 100-day plan of the things that I'm going to focus on, and they see how I've structured it with fitness or faith or family or finance or fun, and they're like, hey, dad, I want to do that too. One of my son's friends was over this weekend, and he's got a little brother that came along because it was no fair that his big brother always got to go to the Crawfords and he never got to come along. So he came over and I showed him the dream board in my office today, and he goes, "What is that?" You know, he's looking up on this big wall, right? And I said, "Oh, it's a dream board. We document sort of where we'd like to go and who we'd like to meet and things that we'd like to be or stuff that we'd like to have. You want to create one?" Sure.
Wow.
You know, he was like all in. So I created a little 8.5 by 11 paper with some colored stickies on it. And I said, "Who do you want to meet?" And he said, "Michael Jordan." I said, "Okay, let's put it down." Yeah. And he writes it down on this colored sticky, puts it on his dream board.
Wow.
And I'm like, "Okay, well, where do you want to go?" He's like, "I don't know, the beach." Okay. So he puts down, he's in second grade. He puts down the beach. I said, "Where do you want to go, like in the future? You know, let's think 10 years out. These things can happen in the next year. Let's think 10 years out. Who do you want to be?" "I want to be an NBA player." He writes down NBA player.
Wow.
With the biggest smile on his face and sticks it on there. "I want to go to Africa. I want to do this." He starts coming up with so many ideas. So the whole thing's filled. And then so I give him this 8.5 by 11 with some colored stickies on it and a pad of blank colored stickies. Do you know how happy he was to receive that pad?
Wow.
He was like, "Wow." I go, "You know what this is for?" And he goes, "More dreams."
Dreams.
And I go, "When you get home tonight, I want you to put this on the wall in your bedroom." And I could just tell he was kind of floating around with a different way of thinking about how you take ideas that are floating around in your head and put them into a plan. So this is a second grader. So you asked how, I want to make sure it's not just my plan. Right? Not just my plan. I don't want my plan to be specifically my kid's plan. I want my plan to be influenced by my kids. I don't
Yes.
want my plan to fit into the puzzle that I'm creating. I don't want them to be one puzzle piece in my puzzle box cover. I want them to create, in a sense, their own puzzle, but I want to take into account what's important to them and thread it into my plan so that I'm executing on something that's not only important and exciting for me, but important and exciting for them.
That's
so
really
I
cool.
think it's about structure to me. It's about not everybody thinks about sort of documenting their ideas or the importance of sort of putting their dreams on paper. I think that as we get older, we dream a little bit less. You know, we set, you know, if I have some big, big goals, do I share them publicly? Do I share them with a close friend? Do I share them just with my wife? You know, you start to scale down sort of, you know, for fear of public humiliation or being judged or, "Oh, remember he was trying to do X, Y, and Z." I mean, I think we just end up dreaming a little bit less, and I think it's harmful. I think that in certain environments, we've got to find a way to dream a little bit more and not to hold ourselves accountable, but just to be inspired. And whether you're in second grade or whether you're early 50s, I think that I'm hoping that dreaming and documenting and planning and executing generates outsized results for the small amount of time that we have on the planet, right?
Yeah.
Where we absolutely live the most fulfilling life that we can. And the whole spirit around sharing these half-baked ideas and concepts for me is that I'm finding that I'm learning through a fire hose about how people are living their lives, and they're willing to share it with me, share some of their dreams, share some of their ideas, if you just give them a little structure.
Yeah, I think life is kind of learning through this set of fire hoses. Behind me, I have one of my favorite mantras, yes, if. Because I do think anything is possible. And I think the bigger we dream, the more likely it is that we'll find out, we'll discover what's possible and what most people might think is impossible. But in practical terms, you know, as your plan, you got the big dream, and then you're working the plan. One of the things that you and I have talked about many times, you know, we talked about routines for a minute there, which is kind of helps, you know, get more done, right? But you're talking about leveraging our time. Can you describe that? Maybe we can share a little bit of what that might look like for me or for other people out there.
Sure. So one of the things that I found is that there's certain investments of time where I'm getting 3, 4, 5 byproducts of value in line with my business plan for life. And when it happens, you realize it. Maybe you would call it being in the state of flow, or maybe you would call it unconscious competence. When it happens, when you're doing one thing and you feel like you're generating 2, 3, 4 elements of value, it's a big deal. It can start as simple as, wow, I need to work out more. And oh, by the way, I'm not seeing my friends enough. Hey, I think I'll start working out with friends. It can be as simple. That's a 2-for-1, right? Mm-hmm. It can be, I was down teaching, I was a guest speaker at USC earlier this last week. I was learning about how students are thinking about building businesses. This class was called Imagination and Entrepreneurship. Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
And so they were thinking about how to build businesses with purpose, how to align their core values with purpose. I was learning from them. I was hopefully, you know, inspiring and providing them with some ideas around venture capital and entrepreneurship. I had invited a potential investor for our venture fund to join me as a session. So he was learning more about me as a venture capitalist. I was helping my friend who happens to be the professor of entrepreneurship down there as a guest speaker. It happened to be scheduled on the same day that I was starting an EO retreat that evening. So I just sort of felt like it was a 3, 4, 5 for 1.
Four, plus you're having fun.
I'm having
five.
Fun. Yeah. Yeah. So that's an example. Let me give you one other quick example. My son and I started an entrepreneurs club that you may know about at his school. It was for his middle school. Mm-hmm. We started it together when he was in sixth grade. The spirit of it was that I would learn a little bit more about how kids are thinking about technology. I would spend a little bit of time with my son. I would contribute back to the school, get the parent hours contributed back to the school, a box checked. There was sort of a 2 or 3 for 1. Well, when my son rolled into high school, he said he thought he could actually take a leadership role and teach the class. So I took a back seat at that school and he taught the class, and I realized, wow, my son's sort of turning into a bit of an entrepreneurship expert here in 9th and 10th grade. Then we rolled it out, that same program, to a challenged community here in Sacramento, Del Paso Heights, mm-hmm. right? Who, they're not offered entrepreneurship programs in Del Paso Heights. They're shutting down schools.
Right.
We rolled it out with the support of Gina Warren, who's a community leader and just a brilliant person out in the Del Paso Heights area. She happens to be married to Councilman Warren. So she mentioned what we were doing out in Del Paso Heights. And at the year-end event, community leaders came together to see these kids from Del Paso Heights present ideas that they had come up with, that they had put on colored stickies, that they had put on poster boards, that they had presented as startup companies. They presented in front of 100 or so community leaders and parents in Del Paso Heights at the showcase event. The activity was later recognized by city council and by the mayor as something kind of innovative in Del Paso Heights. And my son got an opportunity to basically speak about the impact that he was trying to have through entrepreneurship in empowering kids in Del Paso Heights. Well, oh my gosh, I never would have envisioned that when we were working on an entrepreneurs club at his school in sort of middle school, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, that it would evolve into all these elements of value of contributing back to the community, teaching my son about entrepreneurship and leadership, him in a, you know, in an unanticipated public speaking opportunity to the mayor and city council of Sacramento. My point is that there's sometimes when you feel like you're in flow and you're working on something that is providing outsized value. And I think that that experience led me to believe that there are more opportunities in life to do that. And it's just, it's up to us to stay conscious, to stay aware, to stay awake and look for those opportunities as to where we're going to invest time where we might get four or five elements of value.
You know, what's interesting, Jack, is, you know, I always say I'm on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution. And you think about where that came from, and I'm relating it back to your time in Del Paso Heights. So you spent some time with the club, your kids' club, okay, you know, and then it springs, and you never know who you're talking to. You never know who's in that audience that might take some nugget you say and then do something with it. And I think I'm an example of somebody who's been in your audience. When I first joined the Entrepreneurs Organization, one of the first people I met was you, and, you know, through Tom Candris and so on, and you invited me out, I think, to speak to a group of your younger entrepreneurs, and we bonded, and you and I sort of started talking about, oh, what you were doing to help with this ecosystem. And I'm like, ecosystem? Entrepreneurial ecosystem? I had never even heard that term before. That's how naive I was. But as I saw what you were doing, as I listened to your aspirations, I thought about, what am I good at? What could I do to help? What are my experience? What might I bring? And I think in a very direct way, and it might feel indirect, I was one of those people in the audience that grabbed on to some things that you said, learned from that, had my own set of stickies that tied back to my mission statement. That prompted me to do the radio show, podcast. Now I'm invested into a lot of companies, and it's like, it's really transformed my whole, purpose in some way. I knew I wanted to create opportunity, but I didn't really, for my family, friends, and community, but I didn't really know what that meant. I meet you, listen to, see the seeds you're planting, planted one inside, my heart. And then I'm like, now I'm on this mission. So now here it's circling back around, and you're sort of sharing with me, how you're taking it to the kids. Inspiring for me to hear how it's happening, how it's beginning to take root. And it's people like yourself that have really led us in Sacramento.
So. Oh, thanks. I mean, I appreciate those comments. I mean, I feel like I'm learning from everybody around me. And I think sometimes just presenting ideas and being willing to try and articulate a half-baked concept is something that I've gotten good at. And if you're willing to, you know, present things that are sort of a work in process or that aren't fully developed yet, what I have found is that the world seems to cooperate, whether it's a 15-year-old kid in Del Paso Heights, or whether it's a graduate student, you know, attending an entrepreneur's an entrepreneur's session that you and I were talking to, or whether it's interacting with the business community. I just feel like the world is cooperating to enlighten me. And I just appreciate the opportunity to share experiences, and people seem to be, you know how it is when you're sharing in forum or with friends, the deeper you go, the deeper the other person is willing to go. And so the more sort of authentic you can be about the challenges, about the opportunities, about how you truly see things, about things you're trying to achieve, it seems as though people are willing to reciprocate and share back. And that just is enlightening. It's inspiring. It's educating.
Well, you're humble. You say half-baked, and we'll take that for what it's worth. But I think in life, we want to own our own outcome. So as you present concepts and half-baked things for us to think about, we want to put our own recipe together, our own secret sauce to build out our own life anyway. So if you were to just lay out the exact roadmap, it wouldn't be ours. We need to take these concepts and make them our own. I mean, I think that's what entrepreneurship is all about. I think that's what happiness is all about. If you're not trying to build something, if you're not growing, you're dying. And if you're not really getting after it in some way that is meaningful to you, then I don't think you're really living.
Right. Yep. I agree with that. I think that speaking of the tool set, I think that many people, entrepreneurs and others, are just looking for a way to organize the ideas of their life, organize their priorities. And so one of the things that I would suggest and that's worked for me is as you're thinking through taking some of your best ideas and putting them into a plan that works and for your life and is focused on your life, that maybe you consider a couple of tools. And I might mention
advice where you and I are sitting here dreaming a little bit. Give us some tangible advice.
Well, these are tools that feel free, as I like to say, to adopt, edit, or ignore any of these tools that I mentioned. But they've had a profound effect on how I think about things. There's something that I think EO calls the wheel of life. I added a couple of categories and call it a power grid, where you basically assess the key elements of your life. How are you sleeping?
Yeah, you gave me a copy of one here, and so I'm going to look at it while you go along. Okay?
Yeah. So how are you sleeping? How are your relationships with your family, with your friends? How are your finances? How is your sense of adventure? How are your relationships with broadly with maybe with faith?
Yeah.
Sort of how are you waiting? Meaning the importance in your life.
Fulfilled are you in each of these areas? Kind of like they call it a wheel, so that if you're, let's say, the lower sided on one part of the wheel, maybe you're not doing so well. If you're really wide on some other area, you're really killing it there.
Yeah.
So who's am I looking at here? I'm looking at this example, and it has romance kind of lower. Whose is this?
I'm not sure if that's a sample. Might be off the web. But I'm always, my wife will tell you, I'm always up for more romance with her. The Wheel of Life is one assessment tool that allows you to effectively assess where you're at right now. The idea is to measure how you feel about these areas of your life. Another assessment tool is applying what most people refer to in the business world as a 360 survey, sort of looking at the people above you, around you, and below you, and sort of have them weighing in on sort of how you're doing business-wise. Well, what about a 360 survey in life? What about reaching out to friends? We were at this EO retreat, and the moderator basically suggested, I want you to call three friends or text three friends right now and ask them why they're friends with you. And I thought, oh my gosh, we're not going to be able to get a hold of our friends right now. I texted a couple friends and emailed. They wrote right back. They wrote right back why they're friends with me. A couple of guys were on the phone having a conversation with their friends. Guys came back into the room kind of with tears in their eyes about why people were friends with them. It was an interesting way to get enlightened on what was really important in you to your friends. I asked my wife, why are we married? Why did you marry me? And she gave me some comments that were really heartfelt. I also sent out an email to about 20 people in my network that I have that I know pretty well, but they're not best friends from seventh grade. They're just in my network, and I said, what do you think I'm good at, and what do you think is a real opportunity for improvement? And of course, it was nice to read the things that they said I was good at, but it was enlightening to read the opportunities for improvement and see the patterns of 20 people talking about how, maybe you could listen a little bit more.
I haven't heard that myself.
Like, it was, maybe if you're going to be a venture capitalist, maybe you ought to dress like a VC instead of running around like an entrepreneur. There were some enlightening patterns of comments. Certainly the positives were great to read, and there was a pattern there as well about inspiration and optimism and energy and all that stuff. But balancing those with the areas of improvement are things that I literally put up on the board in my office.
Was it scary to send those things out?
It was very unsettling. It was very unsettling. I convinced myself, and I hope to be humble, but my wife will tell you that I'm overconfident, and my kids will probably say the same thing. I'm hoping to be a confident humility is what I'm looking to embrace. But I think when I sent out that email to those 20 people, I convinced myself this is gutsy. I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. Who does this? Who asks for this kind of candid feedback? I got the guts to do this. You know, that was my, and so I did it. And I was,
that was a couple years ago. I think I would, might have been one of the people on your network.
And so it was valuable. And I mentioned those things because as it relates to assessing sort of where you're at in life and learning about where your blind spots are, about what you really are good at, that is a tool that that I've used with regard to either the power grid or getting feedback from friends and family or getting feedback from others in a 360. And I think
how often should we do something like that?
For me, that was the broader outreach was a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. With regard to family and friends, I literally just did this with friends last week.
Wow.
At the instruction of the moderator, and so that was enlightening. That's why I share that so maybe you feel like you're getting feedback from your wife and family on a regular basis, but I got a different answer when I asked my wife, hey, listen, I'm at the CEO retreat. Can you provide me with some quick, she said, are you kidding? ? And then she answered the question with three comments that I thought were interesting and enlightening. And I was grateful for her comments and the quick response of my friends and that experience. But my point is that before you start to dream, before you start to plan, before you start to execute, maybe an assessment is an appropriate starting point, sort of assessing where you're at. How do you feel you're doing in life?
That's interesting.
How does your family feel? How do your business colleagues feel? How do other people, and then sort of, why not take the opportunity to ask questions that are, kind of hard to ask.
It's scary to ask those questions because, nobody does this. And then second, I'm almost afraid to get some of these answers,
I view it as, let's call it pre-work before you schedule a personal quarterly retreat.
Mm-hmm.
Before you allocate that half day or that day off just for you, where you're going to unplug from all devices, you're going to tell everybody that you're off at a retreat so no one can call you. You are not going to respond to one email that day. You're not going to do anything but sort of invest in yourself. I view this assessment sort of set of activities as the pre-work. Maybe you're reading Essentialism. Maybe you're reading Miracle Morning. Maybe you're doing, reading some other things to prepare for that half day by yourself. And I think when I've mentioned that to other people, they're like, what are you going to do? 4 hours sitting in a room by yourself? What, you bring a snack? You take a nap? What do you do? And I said, no. You execute on an agenda. You're there to read the 20 emails that you received. You're there to read why people are friends with you. You're there to read why she married you. You're there to fill out your power grid. You're there to think through and invest in yourself and take these ideas that are in your head and put them on paper as the launch pad for your own strategic planning for life. What could be more exciting and exhilarating than investing in yourself in that way? And I'll tell you, the first time that I scheduled a personal quarterly retreat, I allocated a half day and I got excited the weeks leading up to, I kept seeing this one calendar day that was wide open. And it's a personal quarterly retreat.
Wow.
And I'm like, wow, no calls, no meetings. It's a stress-free day.
Did you do a ropes course or anything?
I should have had some kind of adventure activity. But there was some planning that was required with regard to the tools that you needed that day, the information that you needed that day, the food, the place. And so I've done this a couple of times. I can't say that I've done it every quarter, but the times when it's on my calendar, the weeks leading up to it,
You've done it more than once.
Yeah, I've done it more than once. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so I've gotten a lot out of it.
But you don't take a facilitator of any kind. It's just you.
It's just
you
me and an agenda.
Your thoughts and
it's
your,
me and an agenda.
And paper.
And it's you're trying to get through it because you have a lot of stuff to actually get through.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, I can't explain it. It doesn't feel like homework. You're thinking about your family. Have you ever read the book, Five Languages of Love? Have you ever read that book?
No.
Five Languages of Love says that every person receives love in a different way. As you might expect, a lot of guys, their love language is touch. Give them a hug. My wife will tell you my love language is touch for sure. For some, it's comments. It's sort of a positive comments. For some, it's gifts. For some, it's service. For some, it's quality time. So depending on sort of what your love language is, you're going to receive love in a different way. And if my love language is touch, I might see you and say, hey, Mark, I haven't seen you in a while. First thing I do is give you a hug, right? Mm-hmm. If it's gifts, I might show up. I might deliver to you my love language. I might show up and say, hey, Mark, I got you this on my last road trip, you know? And so people seem to deliver love in the way that they like to receive it. But that's not always the best way to sort of deliver love. So where does this matter most in my life? This matters most with my family. I want to understand the love languages of my family. And I can hug my wife 5 times a day, but that might not feel like love to her. I might, you know, take the dogs out for poop patrol. Mm-hmm. And she might view that as a service and helping out because we're just about ready to sit down for dinner or whatever, right? And so being thoughtful about your family and the way in which you love them and understanding the different love languages is something to think about on your quarterly retreat. Maybe you put together a little grid that basically says, hey, I'm going to start to be thoughtful about quality time with my 14-year-old. Or I'm going to understand that my senior in high school, he's busy, and the best thing I can do for him right now is just help him out when he's in a jam. My daughter, I think her love language might be gifts. She seems to light up when I make her something, give her something. Even if it's something simple, if I was doing long distance, triathlons and races, she has this little, award that I got for running one of those races that she still has in her room. I mean, it's those kinds of things. I mean, I think those things are meaningful to her as a demonstration. Wow. He came back. He could have given this little thing to anybody and he gave it to me as a demonstration of his love for me. Wow. That's kind of cool. So my point is that it's pretty easy to spend a little bit of time learning about, you know, love languages in your family and then documenting your plan for showcasing your love in a new way. And again, not to get too soft, but that's pretty important to me that my family knows that I love them and that I deliver on that on a weekly basis, if not a daily basis. So as you might imagine, as part of my weekly roadmap, I have targets of things that I'm going to try and do with each one of the four members of my family, delivering something in their love language. Do I do it every week? No. Do I do it a lot of weeks? Absolutely. Am I thoughtful about it? Yeah, I am. Is it having an impact? I don't know. Do they love me more? Maybe, maybe not. I'm not sure. I'll tell you what, I feel good about it. I feel really good about the person that I am when I'm with my family. And I don't know if they're going to all reciprocate and hug me 5 times a day. That's what I would prefer, with a love language of touch. But I feel good about how the thoughtfulness that I'm bringing to it. And so many of them have referred to it. They tease me about, dad needs a hug. You know, they'll tease me about the love language. There's love language for teenagers, as you might imagine. There's spinouts of this book that have come out. So a couple of my kids have read the book. I just think it's an interesting, what could be more important than showing love to your family?
Without question.
Yeah.
Jack, very, very thought-provoking. I think making me want to go write some stuff down that I can do to improve. So just as we kind of, wrap, we've been talking a while. Any closing thoughts, anything else that you wanted to make sure that we talked about today for that person out there that really is on, I think you and I are on that journey of trying to improve personally while helping other people to improve as well. But thoughts to other people who might feel a little like us in their journey.
You know, we were talking a little bit about a tool set that I've developed. I'm not convinced that it is an all-inclusive list. I think that other people might come up with tools that are serving them well. And I guess my closing comments would be, it'd be interesting to hear and learn about other tools that other people are creating. Mm-hmm. I've created a dream board in my home office, and it was really invented by my daughter, who was, sort of inspired to sort of figure out ways to dream and document them. And I just created effectively a way for her to do that. And now our whole family dreams on the wall. And when those dreams on those little colored stickies come true, we take a photo and put the photo over the top of the dream. And I'm envisioning a life where I look up at that wall and it becomes a photo montage of all of my family's dreams coming true. That's a tool that we created that we're playing with. What tool in, sort of the people that are listening, what tools are you using to capture your own ideas your family's ideas? How are you measuring those things? Maybe it's worth a half a day. Maybe mm-hmm. it's worth a day for you to think about things that you could use to capture ideas that are in your head and put them in motion in your life.
And maybe if there's somebody out there beginning to build their own tool set, don't be shy about sharing it with Jack, me, the rest of this entrepreneurial community. I think, you know, I have this fascination that if enough of the Jack Crawfords can help enough of the up-and-comers, we really will ignite an entrepreneurial revolution. I think whether it's starting in Del Paso Heights with a grammar school age child or a 50-year-old man like myself, I mean, I think we are all looking to become something different and better than what we are today.
Well, you found, my last comment will be, Mark, you found your purpose in life, right? You want to play a leadership role in building an entrepreneurial revolution and contribute back to an ecosystem. Your identity is very clear. Your authenticity is very clear. You are doing some really interesting things to have, I think, a massive impact. That's at least one element of your purpose. You found your why. And to me, my closing comment will be, I passed along to some of your team this framework called Ikigai.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm pronouncing it right, it's a Japanese term for finding life's purpose. And as people think through what they love doing, what they're good at, what the world needs, and what they can get paid for, they might find their life's purpose at the center of those four things. So it's a four quadrant exercise to go through to enlighten yourself on sort of what are the areas where you feel like you may be differentiated. And if you can find kind of the center of those four areas, you might have found.
Only I call that my only I exercise. It's slightly different, but it's very, very similar. If you can write those things down and somehow connect the dots to some combination that makes you more unique, it can turn into really something that can really launch. And I think that is, as you say that, I'm like, wow, you're speaking to me, Jack, because I feel like I tried to do that. I'm trying to do that continually. And there's so many entrepreneurs that haven't found that why yet, that roadmap for themselves to mm-hmm. their why. So I'm sorry to interrupt you, but elaborate a little more on
that. I'm excited because you've zeroed in on a target, something that aligns with your life's purpose. And the more specific that you can be about the target, the easier it is to hit it, right? And so in a way, I feel like everybody's at a different stage of finding their life's purpose. And if you can figure out a set of tools and allocate the time to allow yourself to sort of think through what is really important to you and what you're really good at and what the world needs and sure, what you can make money doing, you might just find yourself driving toward your life's purpose. And I think we're all at different stages. I'm not sure that I've completely figured it out. I think you're farther down that path, honestly, than I am. You seem to be, you know, sort of fine-tuning the center of the target. And I'm on a four-lane freeway sort of, and I'm picking a lane right now. And, you know, I'm eventually sort of going to zero in on the exact destination and sort of where I'm headed. But I think different people are at different points in a sense, that path. And I think the important thing is to make sure that you allocate the time to think about that and to not suddenly justify after a tragic event that, oh, okay, now's the time that I just lost a loved one, or I just, you know, had a major health challenge or something else challenge. Don't wait. Let's sort of embrace this idea of proactive living and try and figure out what our life's purpose is, so we're streamlining sort of how we're going through this life in a way that's most fulfilling and most joyful.
Jack Crawford, he is not just a venture capitalist. He is somebody who's really investing into our community and into a better life for himself, his family, and his friends. I am proud to be your friend, Jack Crawford.
Oh, thanks so much for having me today, Mark.
You bet.
You're a great friend.
Thank you.